Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouke Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hey, Jouke, good to see you again. Welcome to the third episode of Banking Reinvented. How are you today?
Yeah, Tim, good morning. I think we're getting the hang of this, so it feels almost natural. I was kind of a little bit confused by the similar backgrounds, but we're not in the same room, right?
We are not in the same room, no. Not okay. By the slightest, luckily.
Just a coincidence, okay.
Yeah. Hey, Jouke, for this week, we, of course, kick off with an observation you've had over the past week. I know that this morning you've been in a room with a whole group of executives with great intentions. What was the outcome so far?
I was in two meetings and two separate meetings, and they were day and night. Like, I was just kind of really flabbergasted. This one this morning was actually quite nice, and it was very collaborative group of people with a lot of legacy from the past, but a very open mindset. Like, hey, how can we team up? How can we bring the best of what we have? How can Backbase bring the Backbase best and kind of really cook together? So it was very collaborative. So I think that those are the kind of productive meetings where there's a level of trust, and then you can start to kind of build together. And the opposite one was kind of, and I don't want to be judgmental here, but I'm a little bit biased, but like, that was like a classic IT organization. We build everything in-house. We have this massive army of people. And I was convinced like we can accelerate these guys by at least 5 years with 20% of the cost. But it doesn't matter. It was kind of very intriguing to see. Anyhow, let's move on and start the podcast.
Yeah, let's start the podcast. But thanks for sharing, though, because it does dovetail into the topic for today. The topic for today is decomposing complexity. Now, maybe for starters, that on itself sounds complicated almost.
Yeah, it is. Decomposing complexity. What are we trying to say there?
But perhaps to start unpacking all of this, so before diving into all of the details, perhaps you can give a brief view, Jouke, of what you've seen in the market over the past few decades when it comes to the banking IT landscape. Because that's the starting point, if you ask me, because that's the part we need to decompose in many ways.
Yeah. Look at this, like, and I think it is all kind of so explainable and so natural. I think like most banks have been in the business for more than 50 years. And I think there was a lot of excitement already in the 70s, 80s about, you know, the awakeness of computers. And what basically happened, I think, every 10 years, people kind of were adopting a new wave of technology. So let's say the branch automation, the back office automation, then we were moving into call centers, another layer of technology, then into ATMs, another layer, then internet, then mobile. So pretty much every decade, massive new set of technologies, and banks basically have been adding it to the mix. And I think all these technologies, I think they had a lot of excitement at the time, but on hindsight, they all have been implemented and developed in isolation. And now if you look back, I think the people at the time, they were not idiots, right? They were doing it to the best they could, right? They were really intelligent people and they were adopting these new technologies. So I really think they did a good job, but it was all in isolation, either channel perspective and channel isolated, product isolated. But like, yeah, if you wake up right now, you have this, you've got this legacy infrastructure, which is huge. And if you would, any banker you meet, like, hey, do you want more legacy or less, right? Do you want to have more systems or less? I think typically the answer is kind of, how do we simplify this and how do we start to rationalize that? And I think that's kind of the major challenge where we are today. If we look at kind of all that complex IT systems, all those layers of technologies that we've accumulated over the last 40 years, how do we start to open that up, break it down, simplify it?
Yeah, so that brings us to decomposing complexity. Perhaps before we dive in and unpack it even further, I have a data point here from McKinsey, Jouke, where McKinsey basically claims that only 30% of banks have successfully implemented their digital strategy, right? So they do have a strategy, they do go for it, they go for a massive a program, perhaps even similar to the group that you've met this morning. It's not that they don't go for it and they even have engineering capacity behind it, but still 30% is able to succeed. meaning 70% is not succeeding. Perhaps to that view, what's typically the roadblock? Where do you feel it, or where do you hear in the market where it hits a roadblock?
Exactly to your point. I think there's probably a gazillion kind of transformation programs out there. But I think, first of all, I think the challenge is daunting. Maybe also if we do one step, like, why would you do a transformation in the first place, right? What are the root causes, I think, or what's the objection? I think, number one, people genuinely like to improve the customer experience. So for decades, there have been talks about being customer centricity and kind of optimizing the customer journey and the customer experience. But despite of all these good intentions, the nasty truth is that all these legacy systems are basically holding the bank back, and you can maybe make a few cosmetic improvements on the surface, but fundamentally the legacy systems are preventing the bank from becoming customer centric. So, and I think that's also the root cause why many of these digital transformation programs are not set up correctly, that, you know, there's an intent, but like, what is the true North Star? And then how do you break that down in chunks? So what I personally really like is to say, let's break it down in customer journeys, because then at least we have a clear goal. We're solving something that has customer value, that has business value. So a lot of these programs are typically, let's say, let's modernize system A into B, but that's a system perspective, where I think the more useful perspective with digital transformation programs, let's focus on the actual thing that matters, and that's the customer journey. And let's then try to see how we can front to back, how we can modernize it. So sometimes it's the lack of North Star. Sometimes these programs are just programs for the sake of it. Sometimes they're just IT oriented and business is not involved. But very often they're just too big, and people are struggling with kind of carving out sub-components or sub-tracks that can give them attainable success. And then from that success, you can build. Another element is, I think you need to have a long-term view. I think digital transformation is not something you do in a project. It is a long-term 5-year, maybe even 8-year type of endeavor. So you need to have stability in leadership, stability in funding. You need to have strong steermanship where you gradually reallocate run budget into change budget. We've been discussing that. But I think those are a few of the reasons why digital transformations do not succeed.
Yeah. So coming back to decomposing complexity, does that mean we're going to look at the complete, you know, daunting task and then, let's say, realign it perhaps? Or is it more of a move forward where with newer initiatives, we look at it from a different perspective? Perhaps for the audience, you can give a bit of a view on what does that mean day to day, let's say, in the first few months, if you actually go into one of these activities?
Well, I think in a way, we have just to admit, if you want to re-architect a bank, that is daunting. There are so many systems. There are so many journeys. There are so many monoliths. So where do you start, right? How do you slice and dice the elephant? If we dissect it, and if you really look at the root problem, is that there is extremely valuable business logic captured in monoliths. So, and that's what I mean, what we mean with decomposed complexity. How do we take that business value or that composable business logic outside of the monolith, and how do we make it a generic capability? People refer to that as a microservice or an autonomous modular business capability, which you can then repurpose. And I think the starting point, you basically have to look at the journey front to back, and then like, what business logic capabilities do we need? Where is that business logic held captive in monoliths? And then how do we carve that out into generic reusable capabilities? And then, you know, journey by journey, you can start to see that you're building a library of generically composable capabilities, which you can start to reuse. So as Backbase, we've been in this journey, maybe almost semi-unconscious, but in the last 10 years, working with more than 150 banks, every time you run into new capabilities, you need to kind of drive and orchestrate that journey. So you have to get it out of the monolith, and you have to develop it in a holistic architecture. And that basically is modular capability. It has to be autonomous. It is reusable. It is exposed via an API. But over time, you really start to create a very nice set of capabilities. And that's what I think what we mean with how do you decompose complexity, or how do you decompose legacy in a way. You are freeing up the valuable logic that is inside this monolith, and you are translating that into a next generation cloud-based modular business capability. And that's what you kind of do over time. And if you do that long enough, like, so we've been doing this for the last 10 years. Now, you've got this very nice layered architecture. You've got all these capabilities. And now suddenly, you do not have to do that decomposition work anymore. It is already there. So you can utilize those capabilities to jumpstart a digital transformation. And I think that's maybe one of another success reason why I think the next generation of digital transformation programs have a much better chance to succeed. Because you don't have to do all that foundational work anymore. There are now platforms and capabilities and fintechs that can help you to jumpstart this. You still have other challenges you need to, but this definitely will help to jumpstart a digital transformation.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, actually there's a few insights here. Insight number one, there is incredibly valuable business logic in your existing siloed architecture, right? It's not that you're going to completely remove that or dismiss it or fully replace it. On the contrary, you're going to pick and choose based out of the journeys that you really need to fix front to back. Those capabilities that you want to bring out of that layer where they are mispositioned to a degree and potentially not API exposed, maybe not in a scalable technology that's also reusable by other capabilities in the architecture. You're basically going to pull them out to the right layer in the right fabric or the right design pattern, if I may. And if you do that long enough, if I'm hearing you correctly, then over time you end up with your new architecture almost.
Well, yes, but there's a couple of nuances here. I really believe that banks need to decommission a lot of monoliths. The question is, how do you get there, right? So don't get me wrong. Like, you would like to understand, like, what systems or what capabilities do you want to preserve, and they have another lifetime of another 10 years or even longer, hopefully. But also what kind of monoliths are basically not ready for the future. They keep you down. They basically, you're spending money on it, but it's not going to make you anytime more competitive or you're losing speed. So the point I'm trying to make, you need to take the conceptually inside these monoliths, there's very important business logic, but you need to re-implement that in a modern microservice-based architecture. And the good news now is, I think, that you can either build this and you can say, okay, I'm a bank CIO, let's give me 8 years, give me an army, and I will do all of this. That's one way, and that's, let's say, the build, do-it-yourself way. There's a second way nowadays. There you go with fintech partners where we say, okay, a large part of this composable architecture already has been built generically, like a white-label industrialized platform. So you can skip that part and you can allocate your development capacity to innovate on top of that composable platform fabric. But ultimately, so that new composable platform fabric will be there on day one of your digital transformation program. It is actually there to jumpstart your digital transformation. You don't have to do the plumbing, and you can instantly start to focus on value, customer value, business value. So I think we now are, let's say, generation two of digital transformation. A large degree of the plumbing, the AI plumbing, the cloud plumbing, the engagement banking logic, the integration capabilities, they are industrialized. And I think that's good news for an industry that has been notoriously known for self-build. So spending trillions of dollars on custom build, bespoke build, system integration to the max with all the right intentions. But I think we need to have a little bit more efficiency where we can now say, do we still need to work in that paradigm, or actually can we go for something like accelerated build where we can take industrialized components that will save us 80% or 70% or 50% of the job? It will be there from day one, and now we can reallocate our business and our IT execution capacity on the customer value and not per se on the plumbing.
One thing you would typically hear in these conversations is we either buy a solution or we build. In a way, the pattern that I'm hearing could also very well be a complete build, to your own point, but the view there could be, hey, there are white label vendors out there that have done the majority of all of the work, maybe for a decade or longer already. So definitely consider it. There's an ROI and time trade-off to be made there. So that's on the buy and build angle.
Yeah, I would be, Tim, I would like to reply to that. It was also my frustration from the beginning of the podcast. Like any CFO who would look at this and would look at kind of the risk mitigation you can do, the time savings you can do, the talent efficiency you can have in a world where we have to fight for IT talent it's a complete no-brainer. It is just, I think in banks, it's kind of probably one of the most rational industries and at the same time, the one most irrational industries. About if you look still at the amount of plumbing that people need to do. But like, hey, the good news is that that is gradually changing. So the hardcore build or the you know, the extreme build, I think fundamentally that is already moving more to, let's say, an accelerated build where you can actually kind of build on top of, let's say, industrialized financial cloud technologies that do the plumbing, that, you know, do already a lot of the system integration work up front. And I think also a full acknowledgement, in the past, you had to do all that system integration. In the past 40 years, you had to do all that self-build because there was no alternative, right? So I think it's also kind of wake up like, hey, guys, there's a new era. We can change the paradigm and we can just be much more efficient. And that will help with cost income ratio. That will help with return on equity. That will help with agility and velocity, all those things. So it's also a little bit like we have habits from the past and we probably have a slightly different set of habits moving forward.
The second thing that I'm hearing from your end is that this pattern of decomposing complexity is like an on-the-go pattern. It's not black or white. You can gradually move into this newer model step by step based on actual end-to-end journeys that drive value, that differentiate, meaning you put your dollar where it becomes more valuable in the total mix of your institution, while at the same time modernizing your stack step by step and hollowing out capabilities from your underlying infrastructure where it really matters. Meaning, if I compare this to one of the previous episodes, Jaco, we spoke of core modernization. To me, core modernization is that heart surgery approach where you're going to modernize your core. It's going to take you a certain period of time and a level of budget investment and commitment. But what does it really impact towards the end customer or the end employee if you finished that piece of work? Well, at the same time, there's all these other, let's say, channels and silos where, you know, also business logic resides and is still not addressed potentially. Does that align also to the view of...
I think it's very contextual. Like we've seen many banks where core modernization was desperately needed. So they had to choose like core first and then we renovate the channels. So I think that's kind of a very classic paradigm. Like first you modernize your channels or you modernize the core. And, you know, it depends a little bit on kind of the level of pain. I think there's a new paradigm, which is also something to consider. And that is that instead of modernizing one of the layers, why not go front to back? So instead of a horizontal worldview, you go for a vertical worldview and you say, let's take a front to back journey modernization. I really think it's contextual. So, of course, the benefits of, let's say, a vertical front to back journey modernization, it is closer, I think, to a real business problem. You can make the customer journey better. You can remove friction. You can improve the bottom line. So I think the business case justification with front to back is, I think, a little bit more attractive. It's also, you can slice and dice the elephant, right? You don't have to do the whole thing. You do it in context and you do it incremental. But ultimately, you know, the way you slice and dice it, it can be horizontal, it can be vertical, but ultimately you need to go through that transformation. Raiffeisen in Switzerland, a very successful customer for Backbase, they first did the modernization of the core, took them a couple of years. They also got a lot of valuable lessons. David has been sharing that with us in public podcasts in the past. But like they first got a foundation right and now they're kind of modernizing the front end. So either way, I think it's really up to the audience to figure that out.
Thanks for pointing it out once more, because conceptually it is still decomposing complexity, but you just apply the antidote there where it hurts most, where the pain is most obvious, but the pattern is similar. And I would say the other part, Jauk, is that this is in flight. It's not Big Bang. It's not going to go behind the curtains for 1 or 2, 3 years with massive investments and budgets only to then find out after those two, 3 years that you didn't deliver anything. Right. It also, to me, has a very agile metaphor to it, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we said it before, like it's not a project. It's not something. It's basically an ongoing effort. So that's kind of take a longer view, kind of take more, maybe a little bit more like a software view where you take a journey or you take a capability and you refine it. So the notion of this is done is to a degree doesn't exist. It's a roadmap. You evolve and you refine based on customer feedback, based on competitive input, etc. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, in the past, and maybe that's from 10 years ago, maybe still today in some cases, people really, there was this traditional mindset, I'm the business, I have my requirements, I have a level of degree to collaborate with my IT colleagues, but the IT department has the ownership of the IT system, and slightly more isolated, they are doing the transformation on their own. And then whatever they do, the core modernization, the channel modernization, front to back, it doesn't really matter. But I think that model is not very successful, I would say. At least it's unnecessary slow. It has a lot of unnecessary surprises. So yeah, there I would say that also correlates with your question, like why are so many digital transformation programs not working? Because I think the way it's been set up and the way it's constructed is, I would say, old school. Sorry for labeling it like that, but it's really classic IT in one tower, business in another tower, monthly meeting to align. Where I think the truly successful examples we've seen, and many of them, you really see that co-ownership, that true co-ownership, and also senior management being very close to the program, being there on a very active basis to give guidance, to unlock matters. And I think to a large degree that in many ways is a culture change. It's literally a culture change. So, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Let's say it like that.
Clearly. And last episode, we spoke of the transformation flywheel, right? Bringing business and IT nicely together, aligning their incentives, which then hopefully creates a flywheel to have positive momentum in the change. I think that correlates to the two towers. Like, how do you bring those two towers to one concerted effort to really make change, which it's not just technology, it's also culture.
Let's face it, like, even if you kind of do the, the scope is clear, the collaboration model is clear. I think in the past, a lot of, let's say culture is great, everything is great. But like, if you have to do a transformation program with a lot of legacy systems and you have to, that really feels like you're walking through mud or molasses. It's really slow and you've got a lot of obstacles and, you know, people start to lose faith because like you have to overcome so many friction points. And therefore I think we are fortunate enough that you ultimately, like there's a lot of talk about people where they say you need to have this composable architecture, but it actually means a composable business architecture. And what I mean with that is that it is a super important enabler. Like, if these things are modular and they are autonomous and you can jumpstart your transformation with those capabilities, now suddenly that will help you with your velocity. That will help you with your agility, right? That will help you with the flexibility to make changes. Imagine you have to do all that groundwork. You're spending 2 years just to do groundwork and then everybody loses faith and it's not visible and there's no business value and la 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 la. So I think also, therefore, I think that second generation type of digital transformation program where you can turbocharge it or jumpstart it with a lot of acceleration power, I really think that is almost like the critical ingredient that is needed to kind of get it into a positive flywheel, to get it through the tipping point that you actually can focus on customer and business value way sooner. You don't have to wait for 2 years. You can get it in, let's say, a 3 to 6 month window. And I think that is, once people see that and they smell that and they see the success, then you start to see confidence building and things start to roll. And that is essential also for that culture change. It needs a bit of help.
Yeah, exactly. And then perhaps if you really think differently, you could also argue, what happens if we do not decompose our complexity, but completely build this on the site? Go for a fresh stack. Not even meddle with whatever we have already today. What's the perspective there?
Both journeys are equally painful, I would say. What I like in the, if you look at the mothership, the classic bank, I really like the notion of a greenfield architecture. So at least journey by journey, you can move it into that greenfield architecture and you can start to decommission. But you're really changing the mothership, including the boatload of the install base and the customers, etc. It's really, truly, you take the bull by the horn. If you do the greenfield bank on the site, we've seen quite a few of those initiatives, but 50% of them fail for some reason. We can discuss in another moment, but like they're also kind of migrating the classic bank into that greenfield. I've never seen it happen at scale yet. Of course, I see Revolut and Nubank and Monzo, but a neobank that is onboarding, There's a few. We have a few customers that did this and really succeed. So Ila Bank in Bahrain is a very good example. They really are capturing massive market share. But in all fairness, they also don't see the greenfield bank to take over from the old bank. They just can grow much faster with that neo brand. And so that those are good examples that are out there. But you still have the legacy bank, right? So how do you modernize that?
There still will be a moment that you have to go through it. It's kicking the can in a way.
Yeah, I think it's famous words, but like it might be an illusion to think let's build a greenfield speedboat and then miraculously like my 2 million or 500 customers will 500,000 customers will kind of move into that new operating model. I think there's not a lot of cases that that have been successful with that so far.
All right, I think it's time to go to the key takeaways for this one, Jouk. From my vantage point, we started off with saying the objective behind all of this work is to eventually fix the customer experience. I think that's the starting point of all of this type of work. Why would you engage in it? To fundamentally fix the CX across the board. Then secondarily, we spoke of decomposing that complexity, which is all about taking those valuable components that are sitting in monoliths and hollowing it out into a composable platform or into a fabric on which you can certainly scale and have longevity of your digital strategy. You also mentioned this is a long-term bet. It's not an overnight success. It's actually not a project or program. It's how you fundamentally change the way you architect and the way you organize. There's also a cultural piece to it. And then we concluded on, the perspective in this conversation is strongest on front-to-back modernization, journey-led modernization, which is business case by business case, which I believe in this dialogue also resonates with where do we feel that the most business value can be created, right? And there's multiple ways to slice and dice it. You can start with your core and perhaps unlock value there. You can start with the journeys. Maybe it's a combo. But the pattern that we've been speaking of is decomposing complexity and basically going through that lens and looking at how you slice and dice the challenge that you have ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
No, nice recap. Tim, I think like we're in the epicenter of a transformation of one of the largest industries, and it is existential. And I think 50% of the players are kicking the can and hope for the best. And the other 50%, and that's kind of with those failed initiatives, there's no reason for these things to fail. It also really is commitment, etc., and level of leadership. But let's face it, more than half, 70% are failing. So why? And I think I would like to go, what is the root cause of that failure? And is it culture? Is it Kickstarters? Like, is it the commitment level? But ultimately, I think failure, I think at large for the industry, ultimately is not an option. Because it's not like, okay, we can, this is a little tactical thing on the side. Fundamentally, I think ultimately, this is existential for the future of any financial institution. And that's the intriguing part of maybe also of this podcast, like, give it another 10 year and that kind of legacy infrastructure, I think we're taking a mortgage on it. And we've been taking that mortgage for a very long time. And so far, so good, right? Dividends are still high. Profits are still good. Like, but when are you waking up and you're beyond the tipping point and it's actually too late to fix? And I think that's kind of intriguing. And everybody, of course, in the audience will figure that one out to themselves where they are and what is their view. But then at the moment you realize this is existential, it probably requires bold leadership and it requires collaboration between business and IT. It requires all the leaders to kind of get into the same boat and kind of be super pragmatic in how to drive the change. And it's also maybe collaboration with a group of selected fintech partners that can bring some accelerators to the party. And also there, are you going to reinvent the wheel? Are you going to do everything on your own? There's very good reasons to do that, right? Don't get me wrong. It is just depending on like, what's your size? What is your operating model? What is your capability set, right? You can be very ambitious, but what actual capabilities do you have inside the bank? And then based on that analysis, like how can you create a consortium of a limited group of people where together we're in the same boat and together we're going to drive the change?
As much as we talk about technology, Jouk, I think there's a very strong cultural perspective here, or change management perspective. And I it again confirms to me that at one moment in time, we need to bring the executives into the room here in the podcast to share their perspectives, because they are the ones that are driving all of this with the leverage of technology. Fair enough, but it is their leadership, if I may.
Yeah, I know. We're just a bunch of software guys here reflecting a little bit on what we see every day. So that variety and also the nuance would be, let's do it, would be very welcome.
All right, then we're going to wrap up for this one, Jouk. Thanks for sharing the insights, and see you next week.
All right, thanks, Dave. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.